Hello, fellow nerds. Come in to our cozy living room. The tea is on, the pillows are plumped, and it's time to get down to the important business of fangirling. I'm Heather.
And I'm Stacy. Welcome to Free the Squee, a podcast that puts pop culture on the therapy couch for our enjoyment and hopefully yours too. By day, we are two psychologists, but right now we are simply fangirls dishing about pop culture. So don't sue us. Heather.
Hey, Stacey.
Shall we do some content and process?
Let's do some content and process.
Okay. So my content is that I have been doing a little bit of recording with another incomparable podcast.
Very cool.
It is so cool. I feel so fancy. So I do that. I'm like, oh, look at me on my little headset. Oh, and they were Zoom recordings, which I hadn't done before. Mm-hmm. That was fancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did for one of our podcasts, but I hadn't done on another podcast with a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
That's actually not my content and process.
That is your
content. That, okay, that was like a little mini content process. Hee-hoo. Okay, so my content specifically was the movies that I was watching with the agents from Agents of Smooch, which were Desperately Seeking Susan and Dirty Dancing. Mm-hmm. So both late 80s movie, 86 and 87 respectively, if I remember correctly. So my process, so I watched them, talked about them with these lovely, brilliant human beings. My process afterwards was how much attachment I have to movies from my adolescence of a particular genre. Mm-hmm. And the way I was thinking about them is I think of them as like slumber party movies.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right. So for me, that is both an era and a sort of section of my life in my mid to late adolescence. It's also gendered because for me, slumber parties were with girls. Mm-hmm. And it's a very specific cuddly, cozy, sometimes rom-com content, but we also watched horror and action and all sorts of other things. So there's a very like specific energy to that space. And there's a like resonance of seeing myself in those films. Mm-hmm. Like watching Madonna's wardrobe and watching one of the clubs she goes to, I was like, oh, look, the evolution of my fashion.
I know, flashback.
I was like, oh, here we are. So that was funny, like at one level, but it's also connected to I remember which girls gave me the little, you know, gumi bracelets, the little rubber bracelets I wore. And that was like a slumber party thing. So there was just this whole like soft spot about it that felt gentle to little teenager me, right?
So it was sweet.
Reminiscent, nostalgic, happy, and it made me want to go watch a whole bunch of movies from that time that have that specific feeling. Like, with my wife on the couch in jammies with popcorn.
I love that for you.
Yeah, it was great.
So sweet. You know, I had my own 80s moment recently. So in a new book I'm writing, one of the characters, this character is my age. I'm going to do some really heavy lifting and storytelling in this book. So there are other things I'm making really simple.
Okay.
Like just living through the decades I lived with, and I'm not making a new world. But there's a scene in college, and I wanted to be able to set the stage or be able to tell people what time period we were in without saying 1980s or 1987. So I went and I just Googled slang from 1980. Oh. And so what was so funny is that I think there were 30 words on the list, 28 of them were words I used all the time.
Wait, used or still used?
I would say 20 of them I still use. And I'm like, oh, God, how old do I sound? What do I sound like to my child? It's kind of scary. But it was really fun to be like, because often when you're writing of a decade or time period that you didn't live through, you're always kind of guessing and trying to get context and trying to make sure that the way you're doing those idioms or phrases or slang is correct, right? Not so with the 80s. I was like, I could use chill and I could use legit and I could use awesome and I could use all of these words completely fluidly. Because of course, they're the language that we spoke. So correct. I had my, and it, which was just fun. It was just fun to go back there.
Yeah.
So I had my own 80s moment.
I love it.
This week. Yeah.
And I can feel as you say it, there's a similar sort of nostalgia and a little heartwarming, like it sort of again centers in you and you're like, oh yes,
there is something about the 80s that it stands out. It was a unique decade. It has a whole, it really had its own vibe distinctly. And yeah. I'm not unhappy that I lived through it.
Same.
Yeah. Well, my content process this week is not the 80s.
Okay, go.
So I am obsessed. I mean, obsessed.
Okay, capital Cowboy. O, obsessed.
All letters are capitalized.
Shouting in a text, obsessed.
Shouting, that's got how it. Yes, with Cowboy Carter.
Ugh.
I love music. I think of myself as a musician. I have earned my living as a musician at times.
Yeah.
I would not call myself a fabulous musician. I am adequate at the few things I know how to do. I can get by, but I'm not something amazing. But there are a few albums in my life that have so captured me that I go to bed with them in my head. I wake up in the night, they're in my head. I wake up in the morning and they're in my head, and the songs change. So one of them was Hamilton.
I still can't listen
to Hamilton without, I mean, if I listen to Hamilton, it will be in my head for at least 2 weeks.
Yeah. Hamilton makes me cry.
And well, it's amazing. I mean, it is so amazing.
Yes.
I mean, it is, you know, it's worth it. There are times I'm like, I'm going to listen to Hamilton and I'm going to have it in my head for 2 weeks and I'm happy with that.
That works for me.
The next set was Billie Eilish music.
Yeah.
Which I discovered through a thing that we'll talk about one day. So that's when I really I listened to her music and I absolutely completely fell in love with it.
Yeah.
I think it is the most amazing music. And I know I'm one of this weird group of middle-aged women that love Billie Eilish's music and what she, you know, her voice and everything. So when I listen to her music, it's in my head all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. It happened again.
Oh.
With Cowboy Carter. Yeah. And For
folks who don't know.
That's Beyonce's new album.
Correct.
That dropped April 2024.
Yeah.
Though I just realized now that I've been putting the date of 23 on all of these recordings.
Oh, no.
Whatever. Oh my God. Catch up, Berberette. It is a new year. It's only April. Anyway. So it just dropped and I really appreciate Beyonce. Some of her songs are like some of my favorite songs ever.
Yeah.
But in general, I will listen to her new albums and I always find a song or two that I think is amazing. But in general, the albums are not, they don't capture me in the same way.
Yeah.
Though I appreciate who she is and what she does. And I think she's amazing. And I bow down in front of the queen.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
But this album is different for me.
Yeah.
I think this is my perfect album.
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
I know. I've never said that before.
Yeah.
I'm a little ambivalent about that because I think, okay, this is a country album. This is Beyonce saying F you to the Country Music Awards after she performed with the Chicks.
Yes.
Several years ago and did she was amazing and then got just
panned. Yeah.
Completely panned because she's not supposed to, not what?
Not supposed,
supposed to.
To
sing country
right.
music. This woman is from the South.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. So this was her. Oh yeah. You think I can't do country? But this song, this album is it's American music. She takes it beyond what we think of as country music. And this is a retrospective of American music. She touches on, and not just American. I mean, she sings opera so beautifully. I was like, oh, who is
on this album?
On this album.
Oh, I have to listen to the whole
thing.
And
I thought, oh, who did she get to guest this? No.
Oh, wow.
It's Beyonce and it is beautiful. In fact, I was telling my daughter about it and she's like, yeah, yeah. I said, wait, listen. I want you to listen to the song. I get an eye roll because, you know.
That's how it is.
That's because she has her own things that are important to her and I'm making her listen to something she doesn't want to listen to. I'd probably eye roll her too. But anyway, and when Beyonce hits a high note and even my daughter was like, oh, because it's so beautiful. So, and she does a Beatles cover, Blackbird, which when a black woman sings that song with four other black country artists that are not getting the recognition they deserve. And they say, Blackbird fly. It means a whole new thing.
That song is about a black woman. Isn't it originally the story?
I know it's written as a civil rights song.
Yeah.
But when a black woman sings it.
Oh, it's absolutely completely different.
It's incredible. And it's so beautiful. And she does Jolene, but she's rewritten the words. And so, but I'm my ambivalence is, do I like this because this is closer to my whiteness, my European Americanness? Is that why this feels so synergistic with me? Is it because the album is so different? I don't really know, but I don't know.
Well, in my understanding, so I haven't listened to, I've listened to bits, like a piece of a song, but I have not done a full listen through, which is like my favorite, speaking of like the 80s, to lay on my tummy with the lyrics in front of me and listen, except for sure. instead of liner notes, it's now just scrolling across my Spotify, right?
For sure.
But my understanding is that this, that's part of what is happening with this album. Like that there is sort of a, there is conversations about race, about guns and the context of guns for Black people and the way they are perceived in the United States is a different context. There's things about family and what it means to disrupt or not disrupt family. So there is sort of this kind of F you and also take back, like you cannot take these things from me happening.
Right. In fact, she directly addresses the CMAs in one of the songs.
Yeah.
But yes, there's there is an absolute dialogue and interrogation of what it means to be American and what it means to hold these deep roots that country music purportedly claims in that genre, that she just kind of blows it open and says,
whose roots are they? What do they mean? Right.
And to exclude the South or to exclude Black Americans from country music, it's ridiculous. It's just absolutely absurd and irrational. I mean, not that we don't do absurd or irrational things all the time, but
she's directly talking. She's talking about that like literally, and then the context of the album itself. Yeah.
And then there's just brilliance in the music and how the album is constructed. So she's got Dolly Parton comes on, and you know we love Dolly Parton.
We do.
And she comes on and she gives her blessing essentially on Jolene. Willie Nelson comes
on. I was going to say, I think Willie Nelson's there.
And she features in the same way Linda Mortel, who was the first Black woman to sing at the Grand Ole Opry.
Wow.
And so there is this active blessing on this, right? So that you can't say no. And then the way she's constructed it, she moves through, she sets it up so the songs are on the radio. She sets it up so the songs are on a jukebox.
Yeah.
There are these interstitial moments where you can hear, like you hear the quarter going into the jukebox for some of the songs. It ranges from the most modern. So she does a duet with Miley Cyrus. Which all of the songs also come from movies, apparently. So she does one that is about two women in a car. So very Thelma and Louise, but maybe not. Like there's definitely sapphic elements, queer elements in that. And nobody has said it is or it isn't. I mean, it's open. It's clearly a love song. It's open to your interpretation, but it's two women singing about, you know, she says it's been a long time since I wanted to pull my hand away and maybe it's time for something new.
Yeah.
Right. So, and she covers 1960s. It's all the range. So there's just nothing about this album I don't like. And I have listened to it over and over and over again. I'm not tired of it. It's in my head all the time. The music is so fun. I mean, the Texas Hold'em song, I am going to, I listen to it when I walk the dogs and I'm dancing on the street. It's so much fun. So I'm just about this album.
Yeah.
So listen.
First of all, correct. You are correct. And full credit, my wife has been like, babe, will you sit with me and listen to the amazing thing that is this incredible album?
I listened to it like the day it dropped. And then I went to Stacey's house to play Dungeons and Dragons. D&D. Yep. But I walk in and I like kind of walk by Stacey and I'm like to her wife, okay, you have to listen to this with me. Because I've been texting her. So we just sat down and we turned on the screen and we were listening to Jolene. It was amazing.
I love it.
Yeah.
So content and process, it sounds like the album, like there's this content and process for you, but it sounds like the album itself is content and process.
Content and process.
And that's
for sure
just embedded in what it is.
In what it is, yeah. And I do think that's a lot of what captures me about it and captures everyone, because everywhere I go, this whole album is playing. It's not just one song.
No.
Everywhere I go, if I'm there long enough and they've got it on, they're just playing the whole album.
Right.
Which is It was just kind of rare, yeah, actually, to just play the whole
that
album.
That used to be a thing where you would listen to a whole album, speaking of the 80s, literally a record album, vinyl. And yeah, you would listen to the whole thing, and there were off, you know, the order things were in. There was a story told. A lot of recording artists still do that.
Yes.
But the way we access music isn't always like that any longer. It's different. So I love that that's happening. Mm-hmm. First, obviously, that she did that in and of itself. Right. But that it's when people are listening to it, they're allowing the experience of the audience to be that.
And then, okay, in terms of content process.
Yes.
So in Blackbird, she has these other artists that sing with her. And I don't have all their names right now, but we'll put it in the show notes.
In the show notes, yeah.
We'll put it in the show notes. But here's the other thing. Their downloads have gone up by hundreds of percents. So here's these people opening, blessing, saying, you know, you are part of us.
Yes.
And then here's Beyonce doing that
Correct.
For other artists that have not reached the prominence she has reached.
Yeah.
And other people are discovering them. So, I mean, that is content and process here.
Absolutely.
And that's the dialectic, right? That's the conversation. Don't we all belong? Don't we all have a voice? Don't we all have a right to say what we say?
Yeah.
And have that be heard?
So good. That's amazing. Help me, Lord, from these fantasies in my head. They ain't never been safe ones. I don't fellowship with these fake ones. So let's travel to white chapels and sing hymns. Whole rosary. Hey, Heather.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi. I have a thought that I wanted to share with you and talk to you about.
Just one thought?
No.
It's never just one thought. That's what I love about you.
Never.
Bring it on.
It is a web. Okay, so I've mentioned this as a topic to talk about, but I have on purpose not told you what my thoughts
That's
were.
That's true.
So that we could have an organic conversation about it.
Okay.
On our podcast. Okay, so sometimes we do a segment called Pop Culture on the Couch.
Right.
Where we take a show, a thing. We did Comic-Con as our client, for example.
Right, right.
This is a little bit more like pop culture, like internet culture on the couch.
Okay.
There's a thing that I have seen happening on the interwebs that I want to chat about, and I'm curious what you think.
Okay.
It is about cringe.
Cringe, like when we're cringing at other people's squee?
Yes, indirectly. Yes.
Okay.
So here's what I notice happens. I think that there is a process happening where people talk about something they used to love as cringy. And I don't like when this process happens.
Oh, like when we look back at ourselves.
Correct.
And go, oh, I can't believe I.
Yes. And I think it is self-shaming and previous self-shaming in a way that is not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Let me half step to the side. There are things that get discussed online. And I see people do this in person, but I see it a lot online, which I think is relevant to this conversation because the loss of nuance that sometimes happens on Facebook or Instagram in a dialogue, I think, can be potentially hurtful.
Well, in the written word, period.
Correct.
Unless you're working really hard at it.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you can't capture tone.
Correct. So this is a place where I think this is potentially especially damaging or dangerous to ourselves and to people we care about. It is not the cringe I'm talking about is not the that aged like sour milk thing where something in time really looking back on it is, ooh, that's not so great. So pretty easy concrete example, the movie 16 Candles, where Jake, the like romantic character, basically gives his drunk girlfriend Caroline to Ted, the nerd character, to be sexual with. Do you remember this film?
Yes. Okay. Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
That's icky.
Yeah.
That's, I would call that appropriate cringe. Like, ooh, that's a thing we read as funny in the 80s. Really, really not funny. There's nothing funny about that at all.
Right.
Okay. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when there's a show or something I loved when I was younger that gave me all kinds of squee and excited. And now I kind of make fun of it
mm-hmm.
and or myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's damaging to, like, there's a, particularly when we look back on like late latency self, 8 to 12, or adolescent self. And I see it happen more among young adults than I do among sort of mid-age or older adults. And I do see it tied to some internet conversations about media. And it makes me a little sad because it's a shaming of previous self
mm-hmm.
in a way that's not, again, not the like, not those sour milk moments where it's like, oh, really? Like there's something I didn't know, or there's a racism there I was unaware of, or there's a homophobic content I didn't understand why that really wasn't okay. I don't mean that. I mean this like making fun of myself for liking something that it made sense to like in a previous iteration of me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think about that and certainly have felt that in myself at times, right? I think when I was less mature, perhaps, mm-hmm. or confident in myself. And
wait, let me freeze you. You mean when you were less mature or confident in yourself, this is a thing you did to yourself?
Yes, that's yeah. what I would say. And so one thing that comes to mind is I think there can be shame over the vulnerability of that joy or passion.
That's exactly what I think is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think sometimes in an attempt to affiliate with a different audience, whoever that audience might be, as I am older, older teenager, young adult, etc., there's a way that I'm seeing some people attempt to affiliate with a new audience by shaming their previous self.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's not great.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think maybe a little more to another, like one more step in complexity.
Yes.
Is social mores change, right? So if we think back to the 80s with big hair and big bangs and big shoulder pads and bright colors, and then we go to say mid to late 90s sensibilities, mm-hmm. which was not that. You look back at the 80s correct. And you're like, oh God, that was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And to affiliate with the tribe around you now, there's that need to not like.
Yes.
To join and share in the having changed and not liking the way it used to be.
Yes.
So then we end up kind of tossing ourselves in that bonfire too, well, right?
This is the thing, right? Like I think there is a way that that can happen where there's a nostalgic bonding in how right. funny it was that I used a half a can of Alquanet every day, right?
Exactly.
Like
right.
that's actually sort of fun. And it's, there's a like an eye roller, oh my gosh, I can't believe I wore those shoes.
Right.
But it doesn't feel negating the way I sometimes see conversations about that talk about cringe as really negation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know that it's negation to make fun of my 80s hair.
Mm-hmm.
That was some big hair.
Yeah.
And it's also a little bit in-group, out-group process where mm-hmm. if I'm doing that, the difference in having a conversation with people who shared an experience with you and, isn't it funny that we are doing that different than we did then or wow, we wouldn't do that now, doesn't feel the same as when it's, I don't know, there's like a cross negation. I don't know that I'm explaining it that well. There's an experience of, the cringe tends to be about self, but it's like solo. It's not a cohort experience. It's not affiliating around, isn't it funny we did that?
Right. It's, I feel ashamed of myself.
Yes.
That I got so excited about that.
Yeah.
And that I shouldn't have, or there was something wrong with me or bad about me.
Yes.
That I responded to this content or this media.
Particularly content and media. And you're right. And it's about that I got excited as opposed to I followed a fashion trend, mm-hmm. even if a fashion trend that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than, wow, I was super into that show or that, particularly media. I was super into that thing that I'm not into anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think too, I think of, as we're talking, I don't want to sound like I thought deeply about this before. I almost see that being able to free the squee.
Yes.
Is, you do stats more than I do. What is it called where you've got two highs and a low in the middle? So you've got the U rather the bell. You've got the opposite. What's that called?
Oh my God. You bimodal? Would think I could
is
do that.
Bimodal?
Yes, it's a bimodal distribution.
Okay. Yeah. See, together, two brains, and we got it.
We need two brains, or so, each of us have a half brain, and that makes a whole.
Exactly, like that.
Yeah.
So I think that we get super excited when we're less social monitoring. I mean, we're less concerned about what other people think, but we're more naive.
Yes.
We're just less worried about what the world is thinking.
Yes.
And we're not as invested in being cool, and we're not as invested in that. So maybe more childlike or yeah. more naive or more innocent, but you know, we're excited, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, so we could think childlike, but I think there are definitely times I was not a child that I was like that. Mm-hmm. But then I think there can be times for whatever reason where we get much more concerned about what do people think of us? Are we accepted in the herd or the tribe?
Yes.
Are we good enough? Are we adequate? There can be lots of concerns about worth. And that's about conforming and fitting in. So if – and then I think just being excited about anything or showing your joy can just feel vulnerable.
Yes.
Straight up. And so yes. we just may not be doing that because we're just really concerned. And I think there are lots of kinds of situations that can create that for mm-hmm. us. Job context, family disruptions –
Developmental
time frames, lots of stuff. But then I think you move through that, you come out the other end. And now, I guess referencing back to my statement I made, you get older, you get wiser, and you kind of don't give a f- anymore. And you're like, whatever, I'm fine. I got my crew. They love me no matter what. I'm good with who I am. So I'm gonna love what I love. And it doesn't feel so vulnerable
yes.
to show the joy anymore.
Yes.
And so then you're not gonna, like, I think there's a part of you that knows that people will look at you askance when you get mm-hmm. really, really, really excited about mm-hmm. a 60-year-old science fiction TV show. Yeah, I just pulled that out of the air. I don't really have a specific example on that. And I do know people kind of look at me askance when I do that. But uh-huh. honestly, I'm like, well, I'm sorry that you don't have that for you if you don't have that.
Correct.
Or I know that you do have that and you call that American football
right,
or soccer
exactly.
or fashion or something that is more generally acceptable to the populace. Mine is just a little less typical. That's all.
Yeah. So you're talking about that distribution happening over time.
Over
that
time.
There's sort of, and that there might be sort of dips in the, like in not just bimodal, that it could also kind of, that sine wave could continue, but that particularly there might be this developmental piece that might happen.
There might be. I'm wondering.
That's fair. And I wonder actually, as you say that, it could be that that developmental piece is like a chronological age overlay. It could also be connected to sense of self, having been in therapy and felt good about who you are. Going to a convention like, I don't know, Comic-Con and discovering you are so not alone in that thing that you love. So there's a lot of things that could
absolutely
shift that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing that occurs to me as I see it happen online is there's so much that's sort of loss of nuance.
Yeah.
Of these things about who we are as human beings. And I do see sometimes that there is a kind of a piling on of affiliation through negation that I think is hard, and particularly around this squee idea, because we're so excited, we love whatever this show or character or storyline was, and then to kind of back negate it as an attempt, or shame our previous self as an attempt to connect with people now, or to have other people do that, like as you share some previous thing you loved, and then have to say, oh well, I don't watch that anymore, yeah, that's cringy for me because mm-hmm. I was 13 or whatever. I just think it's a little sad, I guess.
It is.
I'm so aware. Shame does not motivate behavior change in any positive direction.
No.
It really is collapsing of self. So I think in a way that's like sort of shrinking and hard. And I just am so aware in a world that is so rough, I would love to see us, Stacey's advice for the day, not negate things that bring us joy.
Amen. Yeah.
That really... you know, title of the podcast, y'all, like there is something about freeing the squee that is both the connection between like people like us who love these things together, but also you create spaces, if you create spaces for joy rather than negation, there are so, you can affiliate around good stuff.
That's right.
It doesn't just have to be through negation or sarcasm.
And I personally deeply believe that yes. that process begins with internally within the individual as permission to have the experience of joy.
Yeah.
Right? So I have to believe that I have the right to feel joy.
Yes.
And give myself permission to feel that before that experience is accessible to me.
Yeah.
And then once I believe I'm entitled to it or I have the right to it, then I mm-hmm. have the freedom to go explore finding that.
Yes.
And then I have the ability to share it with others.
Yeah.
But I think that freeing starts internally within the individual. Yeah. And for sure that can be impacted by family of origin.
Sure, social and, environment, lots of support. Stuff.
Like it, I think moderates how easy or not is it for you to feel like you have the right yes. to feel joy over whatever you feel joy over.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking too about how black and white online spaces can be.
Yes.
It just gets reduced inevitably to good or bad.
Right.
So up before, so the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who just happened.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff that happened. One of the things BBC did is they dropped a 3-hour live YouTube stream of the best bits of Doctor Who.
Oh, wow.
Which you could catch up, not live.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which I did.
Which I will do. Go on.
And they ran the comments. You could watch the comments with the stream, mm-hmm. even not live, right? So it just all ran together. And I had the comments on for a while until what started happening was every time a Jodi clip came on.
Oof.
Yeah, it started being about how terrible she was. And there was a few voices that said, guys.
Can we not?
Can we not? She was great in her own ways. It was a hard time for all of us.
Right.
But so then what would happen is for a few minutes, the comments would be something like, those might be quieted and then, oh, thank God it's 10. Oh, he's my favorite. So it would.
Yeah.
But anyway, it all just would get so reduced.
Right.
Oversimplified. And that's what happens online over and over and over and over again. It just yes. gets black and white did out.
Yes.
And so I just, of course, turned off the comments because I don't need any of that.
Right.
Well, there's no point in that. But I think that's what's really hard too. So then I can imagine. So here I am, a 50-something woman.
Right.
Who's all this, whatever I just said about myself, confident, yes. whatever, or not at many times. But, and I could just turn the comments off. But if I'm not who I am
mm-hmm.
and I'm struggling with, oh, maybe what I like isn't acceptable.
Right.
Maybe I'm not entitled
right.
to my own joy.
Right.
What do I do about that? Do I choose to be outside of the tribe?
Mm-hmm.
Why? That's one choice.
Yes.
That has consequences.
Yep.
That are not good for the human psyche to not be part of a tribe. Or do I conform? And do I reject the part of me that would have excluded me from the tribe?
Right. And that
and then have the safety of the connection. And that's a really difficult choice at certain times in our lives.
Yes.
And it's unconscious, FYI,
right.
often, mostly, I would say. But it's hard.
Well, and I think if I'm a person who's not sure if it's okay to have that joy already, I'm more vulnerable
right.
to that sort of wave of information that tells me it's not okay. So rather than in my ambivalence lean into the space that is joyful, I might be more likely to lean into, oh, maybe it's not okay for me to have that. And so not only do I not have the joy, but then I am more cautious as I read my environment to look for other information to figure out whether or not it's okay to have my joys.
That's right.
Across fandoms, across
yeah.
whatever interaction. Right. And I can like hear it in your voice. Like, yeah, like that's, there's a big ouch.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to say that we can't have, like, again, loss of nuance. Of course it is okay to disagree in online discourse. And different people have a different favorite doctor, for example.
Of course.
It is. There is a difference between those kinds of dialogues where there feels like awareness that other people love different things than you might love, than that kind of ooh, cringe negation that I see happening.
Yeah. And being who we are, we can go even deeper.
Yes.
All of it. No matter if you're the one saying this thing on the screen is terrible right now and what uh-huh. I love is better.
Right.
Or you're the one receiving that of, oh, they don't like what I love. I think it comes all from the same place, which is all not everyone's feeling a little insecure.
Yeah.
Everyone's worried about adequacy. That whether I'm, my need is to push down someone else,
right,
or I'm feeling pushed down, I'm feeling some kind of disempowerment.
Yes.
And those are just two ways of handling feeling disempowered.
Yes.
And the online space about whether or not this particular piece of media
mm-hmm.
is to your liking or not,
yeah,
is sometimes the place that people feel the only power they have.
Yes.
To feel powerful.
To feel correct. Right? That's an opportunity to feel the safety of the keyboard and a space to, or the phone, I guess.
Right.
To be able to feel, yeah, to have an experience of empowerment.
Which is a sad commentary.
It is.
On us socially.
So if I swing it to a positive,
yes,
squee-based commentary.
I like it.
I would love us to share joy with one another more. I mean, you and I do this all the time. We did, like, I don't know, a whole podcast about it. But I would love, as humans, to see us really embrace the joy that other people express and get excited for each other about whatever we're excited about. You think that that could be to sort of risk the vulnerability, because the within the vulnerability risk is where the attachment can happen.
Absolutely. And I would argue that there is way, way, way more power, more of a sense of empowerment in supporting and sharing.
Yes.
If you don't share the joy, supporting someone else in their joy and being excited because they're excited,
yeah,
and saying, that's so cool. I'm so excited that you loved her. Or you loved him, or you,
yeah,
thought this was great. Because it's that, as fans,
yes,
across all the fandoms,
yes,
it's all of us together being excited,
yeah,
for the creators, mm-hmm, creating and pouring our hard-earned pennies,
yes,
into their creations that keep it coming.
Right.
All of us together,
mm-hmm,
right? And anyone, I mean, maybe some of the big fandoms could support it alone. But for the most part, we
crowdsource that.
We kind of crowdsource all of it, right?
We do.
Because, you know, they're making lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we sustain the industry by the industry making lots of different things.
Yes.
Not just the one show that you like.
Correct.
But those, all of those creators are involved in generally different projects.
Yeah.
Through the year. So anyway, us being excited for each other about being excited and joyful that other, that people are finding joy.
Yeah.
There's so much more power in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much more connection in that.
Yes.
It'd be nice to experiment with that.
Yes.
Yeah. So as Dr. Heather and Dr. Stacy,
yes,
we can prescribe that it's okay. Like, you have a right to feel excited.
Yeah.
And to feel passionate and to feel joyful about music and books and TV and art and dance and
all of it.
And all of it.
Your own experienced and expressed creative pursuits.
That's right. And you have a right to seek it out.
Yes.
And to find other people that enjoy it with you.
Yeah.
And to talk about it. You have a right to dedicate your time to it.
I would argue we could call that, there's an activism to this.
Oh,
there's
more.
Actually a book called Pleasure Activism that is around the, ooh, sexuality,
uh-huh,
in the sexuality frame, that's about really bringing the actual joy and pleasure into, uh-huh, people's lives, and that we should be active in our own pleasure in seeking,
yes,
it.
Yes.
So if I expand that to this, there is, yeah, there's an activism in seeking joy,
yes,
and supporting the joy in others. There is so much big picture cultural capitalism negation that the way through that, I think, is this,
yes,
is each other, is connections, other, and lifting up each other's and our own voices towards joy. I think that's great.
I totally agree. In the trauma work that I do, in the kind of protocol, or yeah, I guess you'd call it, that I do, we have a primary foundational,
mm-hmm,
philosophy, which,
yeah,
is the job is enjoyment.
The job is enjoyment.
The job is enjoyment.
I love that.
And that enjoyment is evolution's compass towards what's good for us and what,
right,
brings us health and well-being, barring like chemically induced stuff,
right?
Not, we're not talking about heroin, just to be clear.
caveat, not heroin, not go on,
or crack, you know what I'm talking about. But like wholesome, you know, the stuff that wasn't cooked up in a lab, people.
Yes.
But that kind of enjoyment and pleasure.
Yeah.
Everything that's good for us and everything that is, brings us well-being and health feels good, is enjoyable. So the job is enjoyment. Yeah. And including.
Yes.
All of our fun sharing of stories, which in the end, this is what we're talking about.
It's all about sharing stories.
All about sharing stories. Exactly. We really, the technology has evolved beyond our voices and the campfire.
Yeah.
In the evenings where we're pairing our fishing nets and sharpening our stone axes, but really it's the same thing.
It is. Well, and it comes back, right? Aren't podcasts just radio plays?
Yes, they are.
Haven't we just done this before?
It's just improv. So go free your squee.
Yeah, free your squee, y'all. Hey, Heather.
Hey, Stacey. We are going to do a new segment.
We are?
We are going to do a new segment. I mean, occasionally we'll do a new segment because we don't do any segment every single time.
We don't.
That would be way too organized for us. Mm-hmm. But this segment we want to call Outsight, which I know for you is even a new idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me tell you how this is going to work. So this is essentially a shout out little segment for people that we would just, or things, or just we want to say thank you. And Outsight is a term that we use in the trauma protocol that I use called organic intelligence, which you can look up at organicintelligence.com. But Outsight is a way of describing the process that when you see something in someone else that you really admire or like or appreciate, that is actually some kind of unconscious recognition that you also have that thing within you. Right. So I know it's so sweet. Right. It's so lovely.
I am making big squishy faces.
She's making such squishy faces. I wish you could see her.
As Heather speaks, I'm just like, oh, and my eyes, I look like that little crying emoji. That's like, oh, I love that. I love, first of all, I love it as a concept.
Right.
Conceptually, that totally makes sense to me as a clinician and a person. But I also love that it's particularly the positive bent, and that's something that OI is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume working with clients about sort of discovering what those things might be.
Yes, for sure. And it's one of the things that we can say when someone is talking about how they admire something. And sometimes it comes in the form of really wishing they had that or longing for that or that kind of thing. And so to be able to say, well, you know... You probably see that in them and long for that or want that or appreciate that or whatever the feelings are, because you've got some of that inside of you.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
There's such a, like, I apologize in advance to my children, growth mindset. Sorry. Anyone who went through an IB program in high school, I'm really sorry. But there is such a, like, growth and kind of a positive psychology bent to that energy, which I think is wonderful, to that idea, I mean.
Yeah, totally. And that's, I mean... Maybe someday we'll talk about organic intelligence, but it is absolutely the foundational premise, which is post-trauma growth.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Outsight.
I love it. Okay, so we're going to have a segment called Outsights.
We're going to have a segment called Outsights where we are essentially doing shout-outs to people that or things that we appreciate.
I love it.
So I have my first one.
Let's go.
Okay, so we went to Galley, as anyone who listens knows, because we've spent a lot of time talking about it. Like, okay, enough with the Galley.
I am going to put up more pictures, though.
I'm so glad. I just saw those. I didn't realize you had put those pictures up. Mm-hmm. And I saw them. And I'm like, oh my God, these are adorable. We have to put them on the Insta.
Yeah, so for folks who aren't following there, we do have an Instagram feed. It's not a very busy
feed. You know. It won't bother you. No. It shows up only very, very occasionally around episodes. So that's good.
But we actually have a picture we'd like to put up, which is part of your outside, I believe.
Yes, that's exactly right. So I came in to one of the major panels, and I can't quite remember which one it was. It was towards the end. And I sat down next to this woman, and I do the seat shuffling, you know, where you start at the back and you kind of move up between episodes. So I moved up, and I sat down next to this woman. And she turned to me and she said, oh my gosh, are you Heather from Free the Squee? And
what?
I like totally squeed my head off. she had seen me do the interviews, so she recognized me from the interviews, and that's how she knew who I was, because, you know, whatever. Anyway, it was such a lovely, lovely moment. And this woman did a selfie with me, and she said that she, you know, there's just not a lot of middle-aged women out there talking about pop culture, which is true, which is why we do it. But she just said she enjoys us. And so this was my first in the wild, like, fan thing.
Yes.
And honestly, I'm like a fan of hers now. But I had to run out to meet someone and did not ask this person if it would be okay if we mentioned her name and posted her the selfie with her. So you know who you are. Just get on the Insta.
Can we say like an initial?
Oh yes. So J.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if it's okay if we mention your name and put that picture on our Insta, would you contact us through Insta and let us know?
Yes, please. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, we'd like to do an outside for you.
Yes, with you. Exactly. Directly.
Directly. Yeah.
I love it. Also, that's such a fun moment.
Oh my gosh, Stacey, it was kind of amazing. I lost my shit. She's like, she might be like, oh, they're actually weird in person. I don't know.
This, listeners, is why we don't have a visual.
Exactly.
With our recordings. Thank you.
Anyway, so you know who you are. Let us know if it's okay. And if it's not okay with you, that's okay. Shout out outside to you. Anyway, it was an amazing moment for me, and I'm really appreciative.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have more.
More outsides.
Yeah.
We do. I have one for Smooch, which is another incomparable podcast.
Oh my gosh. Do we love Directa Weirstra or what?
Yes.
Director Weirstra.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So can you talk a little bit about Smooch as a podcast, and I can tell you my specific experience?
I can. So Smooch is a romance-based podcast. Director Annette Weirstra has her set of agents. These are people who love romance and comedy and the ways romance shows up in pop culture. And so she will give us assignments about books and movies and TV, and we get to come on and chat about it. And I've been on several times. My last one is actually her last episode, where we talk about the TV show Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which I actually think you and I should also talk about, because okay. There is a whole episode where they're in couples therapy.
Oh, yeah.
And the therapist is Sarah Paulson.
Oh, my God.
OMG.
100%.
Okay. So it's a rotating group of mostly women, though some lovely, lovely men.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about romance, and it's just an absolute hoot. So
amazing.
And we encourage you to check it out. It's also on the Incomparable Network.
So I have listened to some, but I had not been invited to participate exactly. Director. The director. We're giving her a definite article, which I think she'll appreciate.
She will. In fact, I think from now on, it's just the director.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
That's your name now. Yep. Welcome aboard. So the director joined us for one of our podcasts about a Hanukkah movie called Round and Round.
Yes, and she was our very first guest.
I think so. Yeah. And she was wonderful.
She was so great.
We've been chatting back and forth, becoming friends. And so I was invited to a conversation about Desperately Seeking Susan.
Which makes me laugh so hard, because that is so you.
It is so me, which I'm going to come back to in a second. And then I was also invited to talk specifically about Dirty Dancing, which is
also so you.
Correct. There's a theme, listeners.
And I think if you kind of smush those together, you get a lot of Stacey right there. Like that's like most of the mold is full. There's a little more than that, but that's a lot of it.
Well, the conversation for Dirty Dancing also included a little Mrs. Maisel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and yeah.
So I think that fills out the rest of the mold.
Yep. Yep.
We're there. We're done. So my outsite is to the Smooch podcast, to the director herself, and to all the other agents out there. It was such a joyful experience to be part of. Also, you had said, and other people had said, oh, everyone's so lovely. You know what everyone also is? Freaking smart.
Right?
Holy cow.
I know.
Like analyzing, not like film analysis the way you might do in film school, but really like thoughtful reflection about the content, about the story, about when it was originally in theaters versus seeing it now. It was striking.
I can't imagine actually having better podcasts about pop culture than what The Incomparable does. And
yeah,
the director does an amazing job of covering romance.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So my outsight is to Smooch, is to the director herself, and to all the other agents. I'm so glad to be an agent. Thank you for welcoming me aboard.
And yeah, because this was your first guesting on a podcast other than ours, right? I mean, not that you guest on ours, but yeah, this was your first extra.
Yeah, I feel fancy.
You are fancy. You are so fancy. And then we have one more outside.
We do.
Okay, so there's a website called Chartable that in their free subscription just very, very simply kind of updates you on your rankings of podcasts. And we're not really tracking numbers or anything, as you know, because I don't know. Do you think we're up to maybe 30 listeners? I don't know.
I actually think we're higher than that.
Okay, maybe
I'm starting to hear feedback from like second and third iterations. You know, on LinkedIn, how you have connections, like somewhere multiple connections out, mm-hmm. are people saying, "Hey, I heard your podcast." I'm like, "Oh,
that's very cool.
That's fun." So I don't know that we're at a triple. Okay. I don't think we're there yet.
Probably not.
Probably not. But higher double digits than I expected.
I appreciate that. Firmly in the double digits.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we don't track numbers, but I just thought it would be fun. It's a free website. It sends you information on weekly or daily about kind of where you are ranking the world. And for me, that's just fascinating, especially because I noticed a thing.
What did you notice?
We are very popular in Sweden.
Sorry, what?
I know. We are very popular in Sweden. I mean, where we turn up on the charts amazes me. Germany. I mean, Great Britain makes sense, but Germany, Australia, France. But
is this like that David Hasselhoff shirt? I'm big in Europe. Is that what's happening?
Well, a little bit.
Okay.
But particularly our shirt should say, I'm big in Sweden. Because we are on Sweden charts. Like everybody else has dropped off. Everybody else in the world is like, hey, we're done with them. We heard them. We're done. It's good. See you later. But Sweden is like, we're just on their charts for weeks and weeks. And I get, if we're in the top 250, then we get a notice. So we have something very special for Sweden. I got to visit Stockholm last summer. Fell in love with your city and your country and would love to spend time there again, but we have a special message for you.
Tack så mycket.
We're not sure why we're so popular in Sweden, but big outsight to you all. Thank you for listening.
Yes,
it's fabulous.
Thanks to Google Translate for what I am hoping is a reasonable translation of thank you very much.
I do know that talk is thank you.
Okay, so we got a little. We're hopeful.
We're hopeful, yeah. We're hopeful. So anyway, thanks you guys. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Sweden. Well, dearest listeners, the teapot is empty and our time is up. Please join us again for more Squee.
And if you're really lucky, some actual psychological insight into the world of pop culture.
If you're into Squee as much as we are, you can become an Incomparable member for just a little bit of money. There are so many awesome things about membership. A private members-only Discord server, unedited bootleg versions, early episode drops, and special members-only Discord feed.
And on the Incomparable Discord, you get to comment on our episodes and we write back. We would love to talk to you. Just go to incomparable.com/members to sign up. And don't forget to give us a rating everywhere you listen to podcasts. See you next time.